The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Today FM.
It all happens here.
Oh, it's nearly a decade and a half ago since we had the enormous property-related crash in this country. That far back, Celtic Tiger was called. Property prices went to an absolutely mad level from which they had to return backwards. But could it be that we're about to see history repeating itself for different reasons? We're going to end up with house prices being unfeasibly high again. We have two guests who were both quoted yesterday, Sunday Independent, suggesting this, and we want to find out why they think it might happen. First, Carl Dieter of Irish Mortgage Brokers. How could this happen again?
Well, basically, when you take what was one of the biggest booms and busts in real estate in the history of the world, and then you mismanage it, and then turn it into such a catastrophic recovery, what you do is create a lot of the same dynamics that caused the first one, minus the bank credit that would have helped to fuel the last boom bust. So, you know, you would have, for instance, rising prices, which feeds into huge amounts of speculation. You would have low interest rates. You would have people searching to suddenly invest a lot in real estate. This time, instead of regular people, it's more happening on an institutional level, but it's the same broad dynamic. And the basic, you know, lack of supply, lack of planning, a lot of things, it all feeds into it. And so you recreate the tide coming back in again. And as sure as it comes in, it also goes out.
So do you think we could hit Celtic Tiger peak prices again and have another crash?
Well, you know, saying that it's deja vu all over again, I only say that with, you know, slightly joking, because we actually have a lot of elements of the system that are pushing prices up. And those things are not something you can easily control. And because you can't control them, you can't say, you know what, guys, let's just get to like 10% of Celtic Tiger prices and then we'll pull back. You don't have control on a market like that. Really, the lack of signs of stability means that that upward dynamic can push and push and push. And then when it runs out of steam, it's not like it sits still. We know what happens. You get corrections. Really, I think what the market, like what anyone in property would love to see, is stability, you know, lots of transactions and a bit of normality. We seem to just not do that so well. And so we get this mad velocity up and down.
Lorcan Sir, Senior Lecturer in Housing at TUD. Do you fear we could hit Celtic Tiger levels of prices again?
I think we have to be careful, Matt. Good evening. I think we have to be careful about each kind of broad brush that we could hit Celtic Tiger levels of house prices. I think, you know, like all things in property, averages are kind of dangerous. I think there are concentrations in certain price brackets and in certain locations that are definitely going up the scale. And I think in other areas, they're probably not. And that's down to a couple of things. One, over the last year, you know, people have had a huge amount of opportunity to save money that they've never had before. And Carl would probably know more about, you know, the activities that he's seen in the door than I would. But, you know, you can see from the CSO figures around September last year, property prices started to take off. So there's that, people with money, there's a limited supply out there, and people with money, and they're choosing to do different things they don't put up before. A lot of people are choosing that it's better to live, be able to buy a house rather than rent, but even if it means coming in from Westmead every day. And also some people are choosing to buy kind of smaller houses and not commute, rather than the kind of typical mid-suburbs house that they might have aspired to before. And that's partly, you know, pent-up frustration at not being able to buy and suddenly having a ball of money and going out and buying that. I don't think those people are going to, that's not a cohort of, you know, people with huge amounts of money that can last forever. So I think in specific, you know, specific property types, particularly small inner suburb type houses, and in particular locations, I think you'll probably see accelerated price rises. But broadly, you'd have to be very careful about saying that's going to happen everywhere, you know.
Yeah, but Lorcan, I've been hearing not just the issue of the institutional funds buying up apartment blocks and housing estates has been an issue. You also have the state itself coming in and buying large chunks of new developments as well, as a competitor effectively to private buyers. And you also have a growing amount of, from what I've been hearing, of wealthy individuals effectively paying for or assisting their adult children to buy houses so they don't actually need mortgages or need smaller mortgages. And that gives them an advantage over people who are tied in by the central bank lending rules.
Well, the first thing there is that's the advantage that home ownership confers on people. When you are a homeowner and you eventually end up with equity in your property, that is the advantage that you can give to people. You suddenly become the bank of mum and dad, and you can, you know, give your child 20, 30 grand, 40, or whatever they need. That's one of the benefits that home ownership confers on people. Your first point there about the state is something that people don't realise. Out of the 20 or 21,000 houses that we've built for the last few years every year, about a quarter of them are one-off houses, typically in rural areas that never come to the market anyway. But out of the rest of them, only about 7,000 come to the market for people, ordinary people, to go and look at on, you know, on websites and estate agent windows. And that's because the difference between the amount that's in the estate agent windows and the one-off houses is the amount of houses that the state is buying up and the funds. So between the institutional funds, they buy up about 3,600 units last year, and the state bought up about 3,100. So they're buying a third of all houses that could potentially be on the market are being bought by funds or the state. And by the state, I mean typically councils or approved housing bodies who are buying brand new houses, what they call turnkey houses, for social housing, effectively.
OK, there's another issue, that Carl, though, that is sometimes perhaps overlooked, that this is not just a peculiarly Irish phenomenon, that for all of the giving out that we hear been done by politicians and the rest of it about the low number of houses been built, that happens elsewhere as well. And the same forces in relation to low interest rates and investment funds are dominating what's happening in Britain, America, continental Europe.
Well, that's absolutely true. It's, you know, even across areas in the southwest in the USA, the east coast, the west coast, it's happening in huge markets. So we seem to think Ireland is a small place where foreign money can come in and somehow manipulate and be the big bad guy. That's just not the case. This is happening everywhere. And there's also a dynamic between the rise in older populations who have pensions that need to be paid and the same funds who are investing in real estate as a form of investment so that they can pay those pensions. And at the same time, rightly or wrongly, what it means is that the people who currently have housing wealth are being supported in a sense by those who can't achieve housing wealth. And it's there is going to have to be something that gives within that. I mean, you know, I heard another metric there, Leo Varadkar saying he wants to see 70% home ownership. I mean, it's in the high 60s. So like that's as ambitious list as you'd expect from our politicians. But what actually matters, the thing that really counts, is housing affordable or not? And if it's not, then that's a problem. It needs to be achievable for people with regular incomes and not just those who are wealthy or have, you know, high educated, high paid or bank of mom and dad. And these are all the things that there's a broader conversation to be had. And I'm not always sure about how to address it, but we're certainly not really doing anything to fix it at the moment.
And finally, one last one to you, Larkin, sir. Another added problem, perhaps, is the increased costs of actual construction, between materials being incredibly more expensive than they were a year ago, and also it seems labour costs going up because it's so hard to find somebody to do a job these days.
Yeah, absolutely. There has been constraints on supply of materials, particularly steel. I know myself in my own house, the quote I'm getting for building work during over the summer has just gone up a couple of weeks ago. So I'm aware of that. The one thing that we don't know of, and it's a huge dynamic in the cost of housing, is the price of land, how much people are paying for land. And I think if we saw, and it's partly because we don't have a land price register, you know, like we have the property price register. So we don't actually know what developers are paying for land. And I think that there's a greater proportion, I think there's much more interesting dynamics going on if we knew about the price per site of housing, as well as the construction costs, without a doubt, because I think you'll see in many instances that developers have paid a huge amount of money for land, and then you add on the construction costs, and then we end up with housing that's unaffordable. And to solve the affordability issue, which is the core of our issue, wages need to come up or house prices need to come down, and I can't see either of those things happening in the near future.
Larkin, sir, Carl Dieter, thank you.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Weekdays from 4:30. Today.